And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Kelly Janowski. She is a trainer educator with the Delaware Division of Public Health, Chronic Disease Bureau, Health Promotion and Disease Prevention Section. Do you have a business card or a scroll for all of that?
Yes, I do. I have a business card. I'll be more than happy to provide it to you after we're done.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Laura.
We're going to talk today about diabetes, but just give us a real quick overview. What the heck does the Delaware Division of Public Health Chronic Disease Bureau Health Promotion and Disease Prevention Section do?
We do a lot of population health and community-based programming related to cancer screening, cancer program treatments. We have our diabetes and heart disease prevention and control program. We also have our tobacco program that deals with smoking cessation, especially the Delaware Quit Line. And also housed in our bureau, our section is the physical activity, nutrition, and obesity program. And they are more about putting policy systems and environmental changes in place to focus on combating chronic disease in Delaware.
And when we talk about battling chronic disease, this is an expensive thing, isn't it?
It's very expensive, especially diabetes is very expensive in Delaware. For instance, diabetes in Delaware for direct costs, it's about $900 million on an annual basis. So indirect cost is another $283 million. So just in our small state of Delaware, you're looking at $1.1 billion to treat people with diabetes.
And for a state that has a lot of poverty in it too, and does that feed into this problem?
When you look at chronic disease in general, a lot of social determinants of health really feed into the way people can take care of themselves and manage their disease. So if you have lower education, you know, you're more risk or higher risk for having a chronic disease and not having the means to take care of yourself versus if you do are in a higher socioeconomic bracket, you have the resources to take care of yourself and reduce your risk over time.
And of course, a chronic disease, though, impacts your ability to perform or to hold employment.
Correct. Yes, it does. Yes.
So this is so I can understand why you've got such a long title now here. But today we're going to talk about diabetes, and you just gave us those frightening numbers: 900 million in just direct, 283 in indirect. Do you want to give us some more numbers? I mean, are we more adversely affected by diabetes than other states?
Great question, and I can't say that I have, you know, 100% of the data on that, but when we look at over time with our diabetes mortality rates, we're doing really well. Our statewide mortality rates have declined by 28% from 2005 to 2017. So we have less people passing away from diabetes and diabetes-related complications. On the other side of that, on a more positive note as well, we have diabetes rates have stabilized. So between 2013 and to 2018, in 2013, we had 11.1% of Delawareans were diagnosed with diabetes, and 5 years later, 11.9%. Of adults over the age of 18 were diagnosed with diabetes. So that's, you know, it's pretty much stable. We look at that as being more stable over the past 5 years.
That sounds like those are really good rates, because mm-hmm. Kevin Kelly's been in here from the American Diabetes Association. Okay. We've had guests on over time, and they talk about the dire numbers that when you project forward 10 years, 20 years, and what is it, in 2050, half of us will have diabetes.
I think they say that on a national level. Here in the state of Delaware, with our projections through our epidemiologist, so just in 10 years, they are projecting out that about 121,000 adults in Delaware will have type 2 diabetes.
Well, then let's get started with a discussion about, because you just alluded to type 2. Tell us, what is diabetes?
Okay, well, basically diabetes is the body's inability to, you know, use glucose for energy. So with type 1 diabetes, primarily that's more of a genetic or an autoimmune disorder. So it's where the body doesn't produce enough insulin or stops producing insulin totally. So that's when they'll need to take injectable insulin. Type 2 diabetes is essentially over time, the body becomes resistant to insulin. And so that's basically when the cells in the muscle and in the fat cells and the liver cells don't respond well to insulin and really can't use the glucose that we're ingesting from the food that we eat. And, you know, so our body has difficulty using that for energy. So to make up for this, our pancreas just makes more and more insulin. And before you know it, you know, our pancreas is like, oh, I can't do this anymore, and it stops. So even someone that has type 2 diabetes may eventually be put on insulin to manage their blood sugars.
And then there is also gestational.
Yes. So with gestational, essentially, it's altered glucose metabolism when you're pregnant, and that also puts you at risk for having a larger birth weight baby, just having a larger baby in general. It puts the child at risk for possibly getting diabetes at some point in time. And then same thing for the mother. It puts them at a higher risk for getting type 2 diabetes later on.
How many of us actually know that we have diabetes? Isn't that one of the biggest problems that health professionals are facing?
Yeah, I mean, there's no signs or symptoms. You can go for 5 or 10 years and not have any signs or symptoms of diabetes. And then next thing you know, you're going to the doctor, you're getting blood work done, and you know your fasting blood glucose is, you know, above 126, and your hemoglobin A1C could be, you know, 9.5, and you're like, how did I get here? So yes, there's really no signs or symptoms, and that's the scary part about diabetes.
Get the heck out of here. There are no signs and symptoms?
Mm-mm. No, a lot of times they can be mistaken for a cold or the flu or just general overall just not feeling well. So a lot of the signs and symptoms for diabetes really do mimic like fatigue, frequent thirst, tiredness, irritability. If sugars stay elevated, you can have blurry vision. Your skin can start to discolor in certain areas of your body. So that can sometimes just be overlooked.
I always thought that there were distinct symptoms that would make you go to the doctor. So it's often just found incidentally?
Could be. Certainly, yes.
Yeah.
Kind of scary, isn't it? You go to the doctor for one thing, and then you find, or go to the hospital for something, and then you find out that through lab work that your blood sugars are elevated, your hemoglobin A1C is elevated, and you know, a lot of times in addition to that, you may have high blood pressure, you may have elevated cholesterol, you may have elevated blood lipids. So it's kind of a scary fact.
But then you just mentioned all the rest of the body parts. We're just one big bag of things. And one thing affects another thing. And diabetes has a big role in our cardiovascular health too, doesn't it?
It does. You're absolutely correct. So a lot of times people that do have diabetes, they are more apt to have high blood pressure. So, and then they could be more apt due to the inflammation process of having cardiovascular diseases such as atherosclerosis, pulmonary hypertension, just plaque buildup or, you know, blockages in their coronary arteries. So they go hand in hand almost. So as you look at the rates or people with diabetes, the obesity rates, the heart disease rates, they really tend to correlate with one another.
And what happens if we go along and we don't realize that we have diabetes, and I understand there's also pre-diabetes to throw in there as well. so we'll get to that. So, but what happens if you go untreated?
Well, if you go untreated, you know, ultimately you die. Don't mean to sound so morbid, but so ultimately, if you don't get your diabetes treated, it can lead to kidney disease, okay, or kidney failure. So that's the case where you people may be needed to be put on dialysis. It can lead to adult blindness or diabetic retinopathy, where if blood sugars stay elevated for a long, long period of time, they can start to really damage the microvasculature that's in our eye, in the back of our eye. That can lead to blindness. It leads to lower limb amputation. So a lot of times people with diabetes, they may have numbness or tingling in their lower extremities, and that's called neuropathy. So it's that higher sugars tend to really damage the microvasculature in our lower extremities. If we get a cut on our foot, or if we get a sore on our foot, or say we got stung by a bee in the summertime and it didn't heal up, it got infected. If it's on the bottom of our foot, we might not be able to feel it, and therefore that can lead to infection. Then again, with elevated sugars, you know, that state of inflammation, it can lead to heart disease, which that means it can start to lay down plaque formations in our coronary arteries, and also the arteries in our brain that can lead to us having a stroke or people with diabetes having a stroke.
The American Heart Association and Stroke Association mm-hmm. come in here fairly often, and we chat about this.
Yeah.
And they talk about diabetes and not watching or maintaining or regulating, you know, mm-hmm. Your diabetes is a major cause for all of those horrible, horrible end results.
It is. You're exactly right.
So now I mentioned pre-diabetes. And what the heck is that?
All right. So I'm glad that you asked. And so prediabetes is essentially, you know, again, our body doesn't use glucose or use our, you know, the glucose as well as it should. And it's identified with having a fasting blood glucose level of between 100 and 125. And then there could also be obesity, that overweight or obesity that goes along with that diagnosis. There also can be, you know, high blood pressure that goes along with a prediabetes diagnosis as well.
Let's talk about some of those myths. And some of those myths lead to the stigma. And you see a lot of backlash on social media. Someone will post a picture of a Boston cream pie and refer to it as diabetes on a plate, and instantly, no, you're shaming. It's not that food that is out there, and there is some stigma attached to a diagnosis, like you caused it yourself.
No, and that's totally untrue. You know, there are risk factors, okay, and we have modifiable risk factors, and we have risk factors that we can't modify. So all of these can either lead to prediabetes or lead to diabetes. So when we look at risk factors, the ones that we can't really modify are our age, our gender, our race, our ethnicity, and our family history. Okay, so you're dealt with what you got from, you know, your parents. So genetics play a role in prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. Modifiable risk factors, so when we look at prediabetes or diabetes, we can certainly modify a few things. We can modify our weight, right? We can work, if we're overweight or obese, we can work to kind of lose weight. And we can control the foods that we eat, so making sure that we're making healthier choices. And along with that, really paying attention to our portion size as well. Okay, we have the influence over bad behaviors. Okay, so when I say bad behaviors, think smoking, drinking, drugs, that type of thing. And then also sedentary lifestyle. So if we're sitting around a lot, not moving our body, that is a risk factor that we do have control over.
Yeah. You know what? We're close enough to the halfway point. This is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are talking to Kelly Janoski. She is a trainer educator with the Delaware Division of Public Health Chronic Disease Bureau's Health Promotion and Disease Prevention Section. Got that through in one read. I'm proud of me. And you can reach them. They're easy to find. You can actually give them a call at 302-744-1020. But you can find them online at a really wonderful website that has a lot of information for you that will keep you healthy year-round and not just discussing diabetes. They're healthydelaware.org. Now, you just alluded to the things we cannot control: age, gender, race, ethnicity, and family history. Now, the family history I get, and I guess as we get older, everything starts to give out on us. But gender and racial and ethnic differences, that can affect diabetes.
It can. You're usually gender. It's kind of, you know, about 50-50. So basically, a lot of times more men are predisposed to.
But they can't get pregnant.
But they can't get pregnant. That's correct. But in terms of race or ethnicity, when we look at overall national data for diabetes, we look at African Americans have a higher rate of diabetes and heart disease. Also affected populations for an increased risk for diabetes include Latinos, Hispanics, Asian Americans, and Native Americans or Pacific Islanders tend to be more at risk. And then Asian Americans, actually, they're more at risk because they actually may be predisposed to diabetes or prediabetes at a lower BMI than the other races that we just talked about.
Does this hold true? If you can tell me to pound sand or go to the internet for this one. Does this hold true, though, say with the Asian American population? If you went to Japan, would you see the same rates, or is it us that our good old American diet that is doing it?
I think when you look at diabetes rates in Japan, it's more so if they are following an Americanized diet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you alluded to BMI. So mm-hmm. what can we do? Give up smoking, give up drinking, don't do the drugs, and work on our BMI? But what will that do as far as if we've got our family history counting against us?
Well, it's all about reducing our risk. So if we exercise or be more physically active, okay, just a little bit of weight loss, okay? So only 5 to 10%, of your weight can help reduce insulin resistance. So for instance, if we have a 200-pound gentleman in the room with us, 5% would be losing 10 pounds. 10% would be losing 20 pounds, and that can go a long way to help stabilizing and controlling blood sugar levels and blood pressure.
Is diabetes ever reversible?
No. Okay. I mean, there's research out there. You may see some peer-reviewed journals that talk about, okay, we've had X number of patients. They did lifestyle and behavior modification. They came off their medications. So sometimes with type 2, you may have the ability through self-care behaviors to come off of your diabetes medications and then just control diabetes with healthy eating, with physical activity, with weight loss or weight maintenance. With type 1 diabetes, there is no cure. It's a lifelong disease that is constant. It's 24/7, 365 days a year. So at this point in time, there is no cure for type 1 other than to take your medications, adhere to taking your medications, monitor your blood sugars, find ways to solve problems that may come up, reduce your risk. So making sure that you are going to your doctor, getting your lab work done, managing stress, and also finding more healthy coping behavior, since diabetes can lead to depression, some mental health issues. Usually it's called diabetes distress, and just really finding some healthy ways to cope with the disease.
So we're just looking at controlling a disease. But you just opened another can of worms there when you're talking about type 1. And also, maintenance for any type of diabetes, it is stressful. And it's a 24-hour job, and even when you sleep, and it's expensive too. So let's get into the programming that you offer, because obviously you got an office. So
we have an office, yes. I will highlight a lot of the diabetes programs that are currently in Delaware. So first off, we have the National Diabetes Prevention Program. That is run through the YMCA of Delaware. And it's also now being offered through the University of Delaware College of Health and Nursing Sciences. The National Diabetes Prevention Program focuses on weight loss, so that losing that 5 to 10% of weight. It focuses on fat, so reducing your overall fat grams for the day. And it focuses on self-monitoring, so self-monitoring of physical activity and self-monitoring of food and drink throughout the day. The National Diabetes Prevention Program, it is a year-long program, so there is a time commitment associated with it, but it really goes a long way to sustaining those lifestyle and behavior changes typically made within the first 16 weeks. So the first 16 weeks, the program meets weekly, and then after that, it's biweekly, and then it's monthly until the 12-month period.
And when you get diagnosed, does a physician refer you to an organization or to one of these programs, or are you kind of thrown into the diabetes water and told to swim on your own?
Well, with the National Diabetes Prevention Program, when it was first being initiated in Delaware. The YMCA was working with healthcare providers to do direct referrals into the program. Now, since the program has gained in popularity, people can refer themselves if they choose to. They just have to have a doctor kind of know that they want to do this to reduce their risk of type 2 diabetes. Other programming that we have in Delaware is the Diabetes Self-Management Program, and that is run through our office. So we do all the administrative paperwork and licensing through the Diabetes and Heart Disease Prevention Program. The DSMP, as we like to call it, is an evidence-based program. It was developed at Stanford University back in the early 2000s. And what that program does is it meets one time a week for 2.5 hours for 6 weeks. And the really good part about our program is it's free. Okay, and it's for people with diabetes. It can be for their caregivers or their support person as well. They are more than welcome to attend. Our 6-week program is very interactive. It's very supportive. And the key point to this program is the weekly action plan and goal setting that takes place. So somebody's going to, we set a goal, we try to accomplish it, we come back to the class the following week, and everybody reports back on how well they did, or if they weren't successful, they've got support from the group and encouragement to continue on. So a lot of the topics covered in that program include monitoring your blood sugar, menu planning, which everybody loves to, what can I eat? So menu planning, healthy eating, managing stress, starting physical activity, working with your healthcare provider. So they're just some of the topics that we cover during that 6 weeks. The next program that we have is the Diabetes Self-Management Education and Training Programs. They are administered through the healthcare systems in Delaware. And those programs are either conducted one-on-one, so one-on-one with a registered nurse or with a registered dietitian or with a pharmacist, as long as they are a certified diabetes educator. They can meet one-on-one, and then also in a group setting. And those programs provide 10 hours of diabetes education. And again, they cover various topics in terms of if you're taking insulin. So if you're newly diagnosed, it's really advantageous to attend one of these programs or be referred in by your primary care provider. So it's, you know, all about insulin administration, about, you know, timing your insulin with your meals, carbohydrate to insulin ratio, working with stress, knowing how to rotate your injection site. So it's very, very clinically based. These programs are usually covered by insurance. So I would encourage everyone that if they are referred into a DSMES, that they make sure they contact their insurer to make sure that it's a covered benefit. And then also the key part with the DSMES programs is that they're usually done at initial diagnosis, that they can be done again annually, that if there's a change in your care status, so if you have diabetes but then now you've got cardiovascular disease or you've got a cancer diagnosis, we really want you to get some more in-depth education. And then lastly, usually if there's a transition of care, so if you're going from pediatric to adolescent into adult care, it's really recommended that you take advantage of attending another diabetes self-management training.
You said pediatric, but mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're just the spouse of someone who is diagnosed, this is a family-shaking event. Everybody has to be involved in this. So do families participate in these programs?
Yes, we encourage it. I think with the National Diabetes Prevention Program, that's a little bit different. But certainly the other two programs welcome family members because everybody's going to be learning how to take care of diabetes, how to manage it, you know, what to do. So if you're significant other or a family member has diabetes and they are going into low blood sugar, you know, you need to know how to administer glucagon to and epinephrine to get them awake and get glucose back in their body so that they can, mm-hmm. you know, be. Yeah. be So you need to, yes, the caregiver needs to know just as much, if not a little bit more, than the person with diabetes.
Talk about money, and then we're going to wrap it up with talking about your wonderful website and the education programs that you do, because you're here, and I know you'll go out and we'll talk to groups. So, but talk about the finance right here.
Well, in terms of finance, we know diabetes is very expensive, as we alluded to initially. We do have a program in Delaware. It's called the Emergency Medical Diabetes Fund. And that program is available for people that have type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, gestational diabetes. It's available at the for $500 on an annual basis. And this program can cover insulin, oral medications. It can also cover testing supplies, so syringes, lancets, preps, gauze pads. It can also cover durable medical equipment, so if you need shoes, eyeglasses, anything like that, this $500 will cover that. It is administered through the Division of State Service Centers throughout the state of Delaware and participating pharmacies that have an agreement with the state service center. So it's not like you can just get an itemized prescription from your doctor and go to the Walmart pharmacy. Really, you have to work with our state service centers to find a participating pharmacy.
What are you advocating? I mean, what's being done about the expense of diabetes?
Well, that's a great question. And what we're doing is we are really focusing on early diagnosis. So getting tested for prediabetes, okay, to help reduce the prevalence of type 2 diabetes. We're working with early screening and detection. Currently, we have 103 memorandums of understanding with 103 provider practices throughout the state of Delaware. And this translates into 282 medical providers that are reaching approximately 308,000 people in Delaware. Okay, so we're really trying to focus on screening and testing and having physicians refer their patients that are identified with high blood glucose, a high hemoglobin A1C, or that may be starting to have problems with their vision to get them referred into these programs.
We haven't even, you know, we're 1 minute warning. We haven't even touched half of this stuff.
We haven't. You'll have to have me back.
No, we got to. But in the meantime, you will go out, you will talk to people, and you do have a fabulous website.
Yeah. So we are at healthydelaware.org, and on our website, you will find information about all of our diabetes programs. So the National Diabetes Prevention Program, the Diabetes Self-Management Program, the Diabetes Self-Management Education and Training Programs. You will find information about healthy eating, about physical activity, where to exercise, where to find healthy foods. So it's a great website. So I hope everybody that's out there listening will take a few minutes to check it out.
And you will go out, and you and your cohorts will go out and address groups and talk to schools and talk to civic groups, et cetera.
Yes, we do. That's one of the great things about being a trainer with Division of Public Health is that we interact with a lot of community and faith-based organizations to kind of provide, you know, specialized, tailored education series for their particular audience. So even though our program is diabetes and heart disease, we also provide presentations for healthy eating with diabetes, physical activity, managing stress, medication management and adherence. So yeah, if you need a presenter or somebody to speak at one of your community organizations or events, just let us know.
We can do that at your website, which is real easy, healthydelaware.org. Healthydelaware.org is the place to go for more information about everything that we talked about today. And here I throw you out and say thank you for coming in today, Kelly Janowski. She is the, here we go again, trainer educator with the Delaware Division of Public Health Chronic Disease Bureau's Health Promotion and Disease Prevention Section. Kelly, thanks for coming in today.
Laura, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
You're always welcome back. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.